Okay, I have 10 a.m. We'll start our recording and live stream. Good morning. This is the clerk of the court, Greg Block, confirming procedures for the oral argument scheduled to be conducted by teleconference this morning. If arguing counsel or a judge drops from this teleconference, we will pause the proceedings and clock until the judge and her counsel is reconnected. In accordance with the instructions previously provided to counsel, we will sound a tone that sounds like this. When counsel has 3 minutes remaining in allotted time, and a double tone that sounds like this. When counsel's total allotted time expires. Arguing counsel in this case are on the call. Ms. Elise Golotsky, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you. And Ms. Sarah Fusina, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can hear you.
Thank you. Please stand by while I confirm the judges are on the call. Presiding Judge Allen, did you hear both counsel, and can you hear me?
Yes, to both.
Thank you. Judge Meredith, did you hear both counsel, and can you hear me?
I did hear both counsel, and I can hear you.
Thank you. And finally, Judge Falvey, did you hear both counsel, and can you hear me?
Yes, to both.
Thank you. Judge Allen, the call is configured, and all participants are now ready to proceed. United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Michael P. Allen presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. This is Judge Allen, and I'm joined today by Judge Meredith and Judge Falvey. We are here by teleconference to consider the arguments in the matter of Paul G. Waite versus the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Robert Wilkie, case number 18-4349. Will counsel, beginning with appellant's counsel, please make your appearance for the record?
Elise Golosky of Chisholm, Chisholm, and Kilpatrick for Mr. Paul Waite, and with me on the line is Alex Sachs, also of the firm.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Sarah Fusina on behalf of the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and with me is Deputy Chief Counsel Nicole Cottle.
Thank you. Ms. Golosky, I understand you want to reserve some time for rebuttal.
Yes, 10 minutes, please, Your Honor.
Then we'll make that happen, and if counsel are ready, you can proceed, Ms. Golosky.
Good morning, and may it please the court. In Saunders, the Federal Circuit recognized that VA regulations invoke functional limitation as the indicator of reduced earning capacity. Therefore, it follows that functional impairment in earning capacity can be established by virtue of looking at the rating regulations. Saunders held that if pain causes a functional impairment in earning capacity, then there is a disability. The question today is whether VA rating rules can be used to show functional impairment of earning capacity. The answer is yes. In Saunders, the Secretary argued, as he did here, that the regulations for ratings are only relevant for actual rating purposes. But the Federal Circuit held that VA disability ratings are also relevant to the question of whether pain can be a disability, because they indicate how VA interprets the role of pain in assessing disability. In other words, the Federal Circuit looked to VA's disability rating regulations to determine that pain alone can constitute functional loss. It recognized that VA disability rating regulations treat pain as a form of functional impairment, and it called the rating schedule a barometer of disability, which represents impairments in earning capacity. In determining that pain alone can be enough for functional loss, the Federal Circuit gave multiple specific examples from Part 4, including 4.40, 4.45, 4.56, and 4.67. It determined that those regulations are part of a broad recognition that pain is a form of functional impairment. It's not just Saunders that tells us that rating regulations can be used to show functional impairment. Section 1155 of the United States Code also supports this. The ratings shall be based as far as practicable upon the average impairment of earning capacity. There's similar language in Section 4.1 of the Code of Regulations. And Section 4.10 of the Code of Regulations says that the basis of a disability evaluation is a person's ability to function under the ordinary conditions of daily life, including employment. In addition to this, the Secretary conceded in Saunders that the rating schedule associates disability with the impairment of earning capacity. Thus, the rating regulations themselves assess functional impairment and earning capacity. Therefore, if a veteran can determine that his functional limitation is similar to the functional limitation already recognized by the rating schedule, he can successfully demonstrate functional limitation of earning capacity. Now, turning to the circumstances specific to this case, the board denied service connection because Mr. Waite's hip pain purportedly did not cause functional impairment affecting his earning capacity. However, the board's finding on lack of functional impairment was limited to noting that the veteran's range of motion was normal and that he had no problems walking. But functional impairment can be more than just a limitation of motion or problems walking. We know this because Saunders said that pain alone can constitute functional loss. And we also know that problems sleeping, which Mr. Waite also had, can constitute functional impairment because the board, because that is in the rating schedule. And the board didn't address either of these two potential avenues for functional impairment. So just as in Saunders, the board stopped its analysis too soon as to whether there was a functional impairment in earning capacity. Just as in Saunders, the veteran experienced and complained of pain in service. Also as in Saunders, he had medical confirmation of that pain. He had acknowledged that he had pain since 2008, which was the time when he was discharged from service. And also, as in Saunders, the board limited the scope of what it was looking at. In Saunders, they stopped looking at whether the veteran had a disability because he did not, or because she rather didn't have a diagnosis. In Mr. Waite's case, they stopped the analysis as to whether he had a disability because it found no functional impairment based just on the fact that he had full range of motion and also didn't have any apparent problems walking. So just as in Saunders, the court should remand this for the board to make factual findings as to whether the veteran's pain alone, in addition to whether his pain, which causes sleep impairment, can constitute a functional impairment in earning capacity, based on the recognition that functional impairment can be shown via those rating schedule regulations. Now, it's also important to note.
Ms. Gillespie, this is Judge Allen. If I could ask you a question. What do you think about how we potentially reconcile the Federal Circuit's earlier decision, I think in Nova it might have been, a direct regulatory challenge that upheld the ability to have non-compensable ratings with the portion of Saunders that defines a disability under 1110 as requiring functional impairment of earning capacity? Do you see what I mean about how there might be a tension between those two things?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't think that functional impairment and earning capacity is the same thing as a compensable rating. For example, a person can get service connection and have a non-compensable rating. So it's a lower threshold.
If I could jump in, so then what do you understand a non-compensable rating to mean? Because one would think that if you are rated at zero, that would mean that the schedule determines that there is no impact on your earning capacity because that's the sort of basis on which the schedule is crafted.
It's a good question, Your Honor. I think that even though you would get a 0% as far as compensation from your disability, there is still compensation that in other forms that VA grants you when you get service connection. So they are recognizing that there's some type of impairment, right? So because someone who has service connection, even if they have just a non-compensable rating, they can still get health care at no cost. They can still get prescription drugs related to those disabilities. There's travel and allowances involved. And there's other more intangible benefits, such as an effective date if something does become more severe. So I think the answer is that something doesn't need to be compensable to be considered a functional limitation in earning capacity, because VA is recognizing that in other ways by granting, you know, health care costs and similar benefits.
Thank you.
So I also do think it's important to note that Saunders doesn't impose any additional evidentiary burdens on veterans without diagnoses. It simply recognizes that not all pain is a disability. It says that someone who may have just subjective pain, it might not raise to the level of disability or functional impairment of earning capacity. For example, maybe if a person has a headache for 5 minutes once a year, that might not raise to the level of a disability. It is pain, but it's not maybe the level that should be considered service-connectable. However, here we have Mr. Waitman has been described as significant and constant and also chronic. That's going to distinguish it from something that is just a mere subjective report, also because it has been objectively confirmed in several treatment notes. So in that instance, Mr. Saunders, his functional impairment is similar to functional impairment that's going to be found in the diagnostic code. But the board never actually addressed that point. So remand would be required for the board to do so. And to determine whether there is actually a functional limitation that's, you know, going to affect his earning capacity and therefore warrant service connection.
This is Judge Meredith. I just wanted to clarify. In your motion for panel decision, I believe you asked us to find, as a matter of law, that if a veteran has undiagnosed pain and he can point to a diagnostic code that reflects sitting impairment or something else that results from his pain, that we should find as a matter of law that that's a disability. Are you backing away from that?
Your Honor, I think as a matter of law, you can find that it is a disability, but because the board never actually addressed it, I think they still need to handle the specific facts in this case because the initial fact finding just hasn't been done here, similar to in Saunders. In Saunders, they said that pain alone can be enough, but they remanded the case down for the board to actually consider whether Ms. Saunders' knee pain was enough. Here we have several treatment notes that reflect the, you know, significant pain and also an impairment with sleeping that just wasn't ever addressed by the board. So I don't know if I could stand here and ask the court to make, you know, obviously that factual finding, but I do think similar to Saunders, we can say you can look to the functional limitation that's recognized already in the rating schedule as an indicator of whether that's going to raise to the level of functional limitation in earning capacity recognized by the Saunders Court and by Section 1110 of the United States Code as being a disability.
So you're not contending that simply referencing the DC, the diagnostic code that reflects the sitting impairment, that's enough, that there has to be some additional fact-finding as to the duration or the severity or the frequency of any resulting impairment from the pain or resulting difficulty caused by the pain? I believe in your motion you asked us to find as a matter of law that pointing to the diagnostic code was essentially enough.
Yes, Your Honor, and I just think that the board never actually did that. So to clarify what our motion said, the board could look to the rating schedule and say, okay, well, sleep impairment is, you know, recognized by the rating schedule and several different diagnostic codes as something that impacts earning capacity. Mr. Waite has sleep impairment, so therefore it's enough to qualify as a disability. So that's the rule of law that we want, that the board can look to the rating criteria, but we need the board to actually apply the facts in this case to that rule of law.
And so in your pleadings, you had pointed to a couple of diagnostic codes that you thought court or you asked the court to look at, but now the board. They involve fibromyalgia, a sleep disability. So for purposes of if you're going to use the rating schedule as a proxy for showing that the hip pain causes a functional impairment of earning capacity, would the diagnostic code we look at have to be related to the hip disability? Why would we look to diagnostic codes for psychological conditions or sleep apnea to determine if the hip rises to the level, the hip pain rises to the level of functional impairment of earning capacity?
So based on the rules regarding analogous ratings, we can look to that. Even though we're not trying to rate Mr. Weight at this point, we're just trying to show that he has a functional limitation. We can look to Section 4.20 of the Code of Federal Regulations, which says that a veteran doesn't need to meet the precise criteria of a diagnostic code in order to be rated under that diagnostic code. Similarly, in Lendenman, this court decided that there are different factors that you'd look at when determining a proper analogous rating. Two of those factors are relevant, I think, here, or really to a lot of veterans who would be trying to get recognized as having functional limitation. We see the function, whether the functions affected by ailments are analogous or whether the symptomatology of the ailments are analogous. Those are two different avenues that somebody might be able to get rated analogously under, and similar, there are avenues that somebody might be able to have a functional impairment recognized under. So the fact that maybe the anatomical location isn't the same, it doesn't necessarily mean that somebody can't get an analogous rating, and it therefore should the same logic should be applied to recognizing whether there's functional impairment in earning capacity. And this is also consistent with this court's hold.
This is Judge Meredith. So under the circumstances, would the veteran need to come forward with evidence that he could satisfy the diagnostic criteria that he's pointing to, even assuming it could be an irrelevant diagnostic code, irrelevant from the hip? Does the veteran have to show that he could meet those criteria, or just, I believe what you originally pled was just to point to some symptoms or difficulties that are listed in the diagnostic code?
Yes, Your Honor. So he wouldn't need to show that he meets those ratings specifically because he's not seeking a rating under those diagnostic criteria. The point is just to show that VA has already recognized a functional limitation with symptoms or functional impairment similar. So, for example, he's not trying to get a rating under the sleep apnea diagnostic code. So he doesn't have to show that he meets those specific criteria. This is really just more of a threshold. VA has recognized that these types of impairments are actually limiting in earning capacity. This is something we can look to support this. This is something that the board can look to support this, and therefore he meets a disability. His actual rating would require a more in-depth look at, you know, how he would be rated, what symptoms he meets, but that would be more of a downstream issue than just him being recognized as having a disability or, in other words, a functional limitation in earning capacity. And it's similar to what the court did in what the Federal Circuit did in Saunders. They looked to several different, not just the rating schedule, they looked to several different regulations to determine that VA has already determined that pain is a functional limitation in earning capacity. So it, you know, it tracks with all of that. You don't necessarily need to meet a specific rating, but the rating schedule can be used and other VA regulations can be used to support a finding that there is a functional limitation in earning capacity. So, Your Honors, if there's no other questions, we ask that the court hold that functional impairment and earning capacity can be established by looking at rating regulations, both the rating schedule and other regulations, and to remand for the board to consider pain and sleep impairment as possible indicators of functional impairment.
Judge Meredith, do you have any additional questions?
I don't right now. Thank you.
Judge Falvey?
I don't. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Zaleski. We'll hear you on rebuttal, and Ms. Justina, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. The court should again affirm the board's July 19, 2018 decision, which denied entitlement to service connection for appellant's complaints of right hip pain, and it should affirm for the same reasons it did in October 2019. Appellant has no right hip disability diagnosis. The board considered Saunders and made the plausible finding that pain has not been shown to cause functional impairment affecting earning capacity, and appellant has failed to show prejudicial error in that determination. Indeed, the court should reject appellant's broad assertion now that his subjective complaints of pain are sufficient under the rating schedule as a matter of law for the following two reasons. First, this contention flies in the face of a plain and clear reading of the Federal Circuit's decision in Saunders. Second, this contention is not supported by statute, the regulations appellant cites, nor by the case law from this court and the Federal Circuit interpreting such regulations. And as an additional matter, Your Honors, the evidence does not support appellant's assertions now arguing for a reasons or bases remand. First, turning to Saunders, the Federal Circuit explicitly and purposefully included an important caveat at the end of its decision. We do not hold that a veteran could demonstrate service connection simply by asserting subjective pain. To establish the presence of a disability, a veteran will need to show that her pain reaches the level of a functional impairment of earning capacity, therefore placing the burden on the veteran to demonstrate that any complaints of pain do reach this level of a functional impairment of earning capacity in order to be treated as a disability under 1110. And importantly, in Saunders, the Federal Circuit looked at the very regulations that are cited in the case today, including, as appellant had mentioned, 4.40, 4.45, 4.56, 6.7, and even 5.9, and really just found them to be relevant to the question of whether pain can be a disability. And that's something that the Secretary agrees with. They're relevant and potentially instructive, but they're not dispositive, and they are not the end of the inquiry, because the veteran bears the burden of showing that the pain is more than just something that exists, that the pain actually has an effect.
Ms. Vicina, this is Judge Allen. I'm sorry to interrupt you. So the Federal Circuit was interpreting the word disability in 1110 to come up with the definition about functional impairment and earning capacity. So I was just curious, is there another disability or condition, right? We don't want to mess up our words here, another condition in which a person would need to show at the service connection for a point the effect that that disability has on their individual earning capacity? Do you follow my question?
I think so, Your Honor. And I think potentially a good example for this would be under some presumptive conditions. In order to establish service connection, those conditions actually have to reach a certain compensable level. So then the question becomes looking at the diagnostic code and whether or not the disability has actually reached that compensable level in order to even establish service connection, presumptive service connection. So I think that's somewhat analogous to potentially your question.
Something like the Gulf War presumption, right, to a degree of 10%, if I'm remembering that horribly written regulation correctly.
Your Honor.
Is that the sort of thing you're thinking? Okay. So what I was trying to think of is whether there was any other situation in which we have sort of just standard direct garden variety service connection, in which at the service connection phase you have to put in evidence. This may not mean anything one way or the other, but I was just trying to check to see if somebody else could come up with an example of that. I had thought of certain of the presumptions and then some other types of benefits that really are more akin to rating directly, right? Like TDIU, for example, or something like that. But I couldn't come up with anything else that would say, I have a knee condition, and in order to get service connection, I need to establish at that point some level of impairment of earning capacity.
Right, Your Honor. I think potentially another good example might be hearing loss. Of course, hearing loss under VA's regulations, it has to reach a certain level before it's recognized as a potentially compensable VA disability. So that might be another example.
And I'm right, I think, to say that unlike, for example, and I'm not going to ask you to take a position on this because I know that's coming up in a few weeks, but unlike, say, psychological disability, PTSD, or hearing loss, there are no regulations about service connection with respect to pain, right?
So,
I'm getting at is, right, is that arguably a distinction between hearing loss or psychological disabilities, for example, and pain that the Federal Circuit dealt with in Saunders is the field was open in terms of regulatory guidance in the schedule about pain for service connection. And so the Federal Circuit focused on the statute and the meaning of the term disability in 1110 in a situation in which VA had not provided a regulation. Is that right to your understanding?
I think somewhat, Your Honor. I think, you know, what the Federal Circuit really recognized was that VA has admitted that sometimes pain may result in functional loss. And we concede that, certainly, and 440 says that functional loss may be due to pain, and 445 lists six factors that could potentially affect excursion, including pain on movement. So I think it's between that and sort of this unique interplay where pain is something that would be potentially capable of lay observation. So I think under all of that was what the Federal Circuit was working with when they reached their decision that pain may be enough to constitute a disability under 1110, but only if the veteran bears his or her burden to show that it has a certain level of effect, that has this effect of functional impairment of earning capacity, that it's not just pain with no effect.
Right, and so that was the section of Saunders you read to us, which I think is right near the end of the opinion, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Right, the only issue with that is it's sort of maddening because, of course, it's like one of those pictures that depending on how you see it, it can mean different things, right, because it could mean the veteran has the burden to establish individual evidence on their functional impairment of earning capacity, or one could read that provision to say they need to have evidence of a condition that is recognized by VA in the rating schedule to have a functional impairment of earning capacity. So I'm not sure that sentence decides the issue, because I think it's susceptible to being read in either way.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I think our position is that it can only be read as the former way, and that's the only way to read it consistent with existing case law that the Federal Circuit did not support to overrule, including Thompson, including Mitchell, where the court explicitly held that pain may cause a functional loss, but pain itself does not constitute functional loss, and also with Petiti, for example. So we think the only way to read it consistent is that it's not about whether or not there is a credible existence of pain or not. It's about whether or not that pain has resulted in functional impairment of earning capacity. And that's something that the veteran does have the burden of showing. And then that's something that really becomes this sort of highly factual determination that may differ case by case. But whereas we have this case where the board specifically considered Saunders and they made the plausible finding that appellant might have hip pain, but he hasn't shown and the evidence doesn't indicate any functional impairment of earning capacity as a result of the hip pain, and therefore it could not qualify as a disability under 1110.
This is Judge Meredith. If the appellant can look to the rating schedule as sort of a proxy for showing that the impairments, the symptoms or the difficulties caused by the pain rise to a level of impairment of earning capacity, what diagnostic codes would be relevant to that inquiry? Is it any diagnostic code, and does it matter if the impairment that they have is just one of many symptoms that are listed in the diagnostic codes in terms of how much it reflects an impairment of earning capacity?
Your Honor, I think that's a good question, and we don't think there's necessarily this stark, bright line of what they can look to and what they can't look to. As the Federal Circuit did in Saunders, the diagnostic codes and VA's rating schedule, it might be instructive, and there might be indications that certain manifestations might suggest functional impairment of earning capacity. And we're not saying that a veteran couldn't potentially say and present evidence of such, which would then make it sufficient at least for the board to have to address. But what we're certainly saying today is that it doesn't establish functional impairment of earning capacity as a matter of law. And certainly, insofar as what appellant tried to state with sleep impairment, as we really addressed in our supplemental, the portions that he cites to are really not applicable, given that sleep apnea, the diagnostic code he cited to there, is really just about the respiratory system, not about the musculoskeletal system. And the portions that he cited to with mental disorders, as will be argued in more detail in Martinez-Bowden, also has no bearing, particularly given that mental disorders have to be formally diagnosed. And even more so than under fibromyalgia, it specifically writes out sleep impairment as something to be considered. But our point is that maybe sleep impairment could show functional impairment of earning capacity. Maybe. It's a factual determination that the board needs to make in the first instance. And in this case, the facts simply don't show sleep impairment as a result of right hip pain that the board needed to address. And this is why, as the court found in October 2019, appellant hasn't met his burden to show that either he has sleep impairment as a result of his hip pain, or that that's reached a level of functional impairment of earning capacity and therefore has even failed to show prejudicial error. And, Your Honors, the other point we would like to emphasize, appellant mentioned earlier in her statements that appellant's counsel mentioned earlier in her statements that she wanted the board to consider sleep impairment, which, as discussed, the record simply does not show is due to the hip and was not something that the board needed to consider. And then her other assertion was that pain results in functional impairment. Well, that's no different than the argument made in the motion for panel, which is that pain constitutes functional impairment as a matter of law, which is something that the secretary urges the court to reject, because that would completely read out the Federal Circuit decision in Saunders that the pain alone is not going to be sufficient. And as mentioned, really the court's cases in Mitchell also specifically mention how pain itself cannot constitute functional loss. The Federal Circuit in Thompson talked about how there are no explicit ratings mentioned in 4.40 and 4.45. And I'd also like to take the opportunity, Your Honors, to quickly address the unique interplay between 4.59, because the Federal Circuit did mention this in Saunders, but notably it didn't overrule Petiti. And Petiti really stems from the diagnostic code there, which was 5002 and 5003, and the veteran there had a diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis. So the question there really was the downstream issue of the appropriate rating when there is painful motion of a joint. And it's still consistent with Mitchell that rejects the principle that painful motion is limited motion. And again, as ratings are downstream elements there, it really doesn't go to show that pain automatically equals functional impairment as a matter of law, which is still appellant's argument here. And we'd like to emphasize that the board here did what it's supposed to do in a post-Saunders world, which is considered appellant's right hip pain, found it to be credible, but nonetheless found that the evidence did not indicate functional impairment of earning capacity, citing specifically to evidence showing normal range of motion, unremarkable hips on x-rays, and normal walking abilities despite hip pain. And appellant simply hasn't shown that there was anything else that the board needed to consider. Specifically, the board is presumed to have considered all the evidence, and anything that they don't talk about is presumed to be too scant to warrant comment, which is exactly the scenario here. I don't want to repeat myself again, but the sleep impairment cited by appellant simply does not show that it's due to his hip or that it results in functional impairment of earning capacity. So based on all of that, the board here addressed the issue. They reached the plausible factual finding that pain did not result in functional impairment of earning capacity, which the court reviews under the clearly erroneous standard of review. And as a result, the court should again affirm the board's decision. Your Honors, if there are no further questions.
Judge Meredith, do you have any other questions?
I do not. Thank you.
Judge Falvey?
I don't. Thanks.
Well, then, thank you, Ms. Ficina. And Ms. Golaski, you have some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Your Honor. We agree with the Secretary that there is a factual determination that needs to be addressed in all of these cases. However, today we ask for a rule of law that says that in order to facilitate that factual determination, the board may look to VA regulations to determine possible indicators of functional impairment. Judge Meredith, to answer one of your previous questions, one regulation that we can look to is 4.59. Now, that regulation, although it may have been used for specific reasons in Petiti, it generally says that painful joints warrant a minimum compensable rating. So that recognizes right there on its face that pain alone can be enough. Another avenue that recognizes that pain alone is enough is in the Saunders case itself at page 1367 of that decision. Saunders held that pain alone can be enough to constitute functional impairment. Here we have objectively confirmed pain. So that's going to go to the fact that we don't just have that subjective pain. That's that one line in the Saunders decision, which you, Judge Allen, mentioned can be read several different ways. But we have several different actual records where the VA practitioners are recognizing the veteran's pain, none of which were mentioned by the board. Specifically, we have a June 2013 VA nurse practitioner note, which describes the veteran's pain. We have another from February 2013. Those are going to be at pages 2513, 2516, 2714, all of the record. As far as the veteran's difficulties with sleep impairment, the records do demonstrate that basically the veteran's saying that he has pain and they're preventing sleep. I don't want to harp too much time on this, but I will give you the R sites. They're 2741, 2818, 401, and 996. Each of those records demonstrate that the veteran's explaining that he has problem sleeping due to his pain, including his hip pain. another thing that one thing that does distinguish this case, I think, from the Saunders case is that we don't yet have an exam here, which, you know, exactly goes to the specific extent of his functional loss. It looks like one was ordered in January 2018, but never actually conducted. But we do at least have these records, and as you are all well aware, the VA does have a duty to assist. So if they determine there wasn't enough evidence and that an exam needed to be conducted.
This is Judge Meredith. You mentioned the sleep impairment. Are you continuing to maintain that a sitting, difficulty sitting causes a functional impairment of earning capacity for this veteran?
Yes, Your Honor. We also have records that demonstrate difficulties. He has difficulties sitting. I should mention that he has those records are just a little bit unclear as to what extent, because they mentioned he has both back and hip pain, and that causes difficulty sitting. But again, it's just a little bit unclear, but we do have such records, and I can provide you with those case sites or those record sites as well. We can. So that's going to be at 2741-2818 and 2513. So the record is a little bit premature here as far as what's actually causing his functional limitation, but at the very least, it just wasn't discussed even by the board. So we agree. There's factual determination that needs to be addressed. But what we're doing, what we're asking here is very similar to what the Federal Circuit did in Saunders, to establish a rule of law that the board can look to VA regulations to determine what functional limitation in earning capacity is, and then apply the veteran's specific facts to that case. And I do think that the discussion about hearing loss is an important one, because it confirms the fact that the diagnostic code explains what a disability is, or it can explain what functional impairment and earning capacity is. In the diagnostic code, it says that I believe a veteran must have a range of 40 decibels, but whereas in the real world, a hearing loss to the range of about 20, I believe it is considered hearing loss. So there's already this determination as to what's required for severity for it to be considered a disability under the diagnostic code. It further emphasizes the point that the diagnostic code can demonstrate what qualifies as a functional impairment in earning capacity. So, Your Honors, for that reason, we do ask that you hold that VA regulations, including the rating schedule, can be used as guidance in determining whether a veteran has functional impairment in earning capacity, similar to that which is required to constitute a disability, and remand this case back down for the board to consider the specific factors in this case, which they didn't consider, including whether pain alone or sleep impairment or problem sitting could have qualified, rather than just focusing on the limitation of motion and the problem walking. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good. Judge Meredith, do you have any other questions?
I do not. Thank you.
Judge Falvey?
I don't. Thank you.
Well, the court wants to thank counsel for their helpful arguments this morning, and the case of Waite versus Wilkie is submitted. Thank you.
The court is in recess.